We're back on the air, Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Welcome to the show, everybody. We are excited to be here. My name is Zach Gandra, and with me, as always, is the inimitable Steve Gandra. How's it going, Steve?
It's going great. Had a wonderful show last week.
We did.
You know, wow, if you have any members of your family who are dealing with or battling with cancer or any debilitating disease, they have got to listen to that show. Make sure you catch it at excellentcultures.com/podcast. Doreen Lechler, she refuses to refer to herself as a cancer survivor. She prefers the term, what was it?
Cancer conqueror.
Cancer conqueror.
Or did we make that up? I don't know.
I think
she likes it.
I think she's a cancer destroyer.
Something like that. Yeah.
I mean, stage four, you're going to die, and now they can't find anywhere in her.
Yep.
And the last trip to the doctor, she told me that the doc told her that the scar tissue around her spinal column was actually regenerating itself. You know, what a miracle.
That's great. And, you know, it's great, listeners. I mean, we all have things and areas in our business culture and our lives that are outside of our control. But there are great things that are within our control. And we're going to lead that into the program today, huh, Steve?
Yep. Yeah, program today is about, is your culture lousy, is it excellent, or is it naive?
Yeah, consider yourself a, not really a guinea pig, I would say, but we, as Excellent Cultures has been going for 35 plus years, we're in a process right now of reevaluating what we've been doing with companies and what we're implementing with companies that has had great success. And I mean, you could just check up on our website and case studies and wonderful success, you know, 500% return on investment with every one of our clients that's gone through our entire program with them. And we're still in a relationship with them, training facilitators and doing different things within their own companies. But we're kind of revamping some stuff. So we're going to talk about some of that revamp. Today, we're going to talk about culture. Steve, you wanting to call today's show what?
Is your culture lousy, excellent, or naive?
Lousy, excellent, or naive?
Naive.
I'm calling it we're both calling it two different things, and we'll argue about it. You'll see when it's on the website what it ends up being. But it's also the foundational premise of getting into your culture, creating change, and realizing what is within your power and what is not.
Well, so if you have a culture in a business or an organization or a team,
well, not even just have a culture.
It.
Yeah, it's you have one.
Yeah.
Like, that's the big thing. In every person, community, and corporation, there lies a culture that defines, drives, limits, or liberates that organization to the latent greatness that lies within its constituents.
Well,
you have a culture whether you realize it or not.
Well, the originator of the management tweet was Peter Drucker. Peter Drucker was tweeting before Twitter was involved.
He had
invented
book
even.
Tweets.
You know, yeah, he had his own 180 word or less, you know, characters that he would send out just through his books, through his speeches, through his communication. And our favorite one, as you've seen on our website, is that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And it does. It does.
Yeah.
And I mean, as I was speaking to a group of business graduate students last night at the University of Washington, you know, we were having the discussion about the premise that culture sunk the Titanic. And of course, they wanted to argue and say, no, it was the iceberg. But the key word and the key premise in a culture is the question, why? Why did the iceberg sink the Titanic? And if you listened to our show last week, Doreen Lechler shared with us that cultures of arrogance that become prevalent in businesses are what sink businesses. We saw that with Enron.
Right.
We see that all the time. And nobody wakes up in the morning and says, okay, I'm a business leader. I want to build a culture of arrogance, you know, in my firm.
Yeah.
You know, I want to build a culture of anything but serving my customers.
Right.
Yet what happens is these ugly little things start to float in and start to drift in and start to show up. And unless they're paid attention to, yep. unless they're addressed, pretty soon you've got sneaky corporate politics going on. The bigger your business gets,
yep.
the more people you have involved, the faster it spins. And then before you know it, you know, learning moments of crises arise. And our goal at Excellent Cultures and with this show is to help the good guys win.
Well, and two, let's throw out two. Let's get rid of the terms leaders for a moment. Let's get rid of the terms business, corporations, organizations. You have a culture within your own heart and life that leads your life. and your thoughts and your habits and your beliefs, your actions, your activities. And I would say any community has a culture. Your family has a culture. Your family has a culture of things they've made habits on how they communicate to one another, how you communicate and lead as the leader, what you model and what you don't. And that's all part of it, too.
Yeah, and culture is what happens when nobody's watching.
Right.
When nobody's paying attention. The best example of culture I've ever seen is if you've ever been on a flight, arriving late, the flight attendant, just before you come into the gate, says, okay, we're 35 minutes late because of weather. If those of you who do not have an immediate connection would be kind enough to stay in your seats and allow those who have a fast, immediate connection to get out first, it would facilitate support of these people who are running to the next connection. Everybody says okay. Everybody makes up their mind that they're going to be compassionate, caring, and understanding. But the minute that little ping takes place, what happens? You know, people forget all about what the commitment was that they made. They get out of their seats. They start undoing their luggage. And the people who are actually struggling to make a fast connection end up at the end of the line.
Sure.
But nobody intended that. Yeah. Nobody created that. Nobody goal set or set a goal for it. It just happened.
Yeah.
And culture just happens in teams, in families, in organizations, in business all the time. And if you don't pay attention to it, the ugly stuff starts to get there. And pretty soon, you know, awful things happen and no one intends them.
Culture is something that happens either by accident or design. It either just naturally occurs, and I guess we'll call that unskilled or lousy. Steve really likes this word, lousy culture. It happens, you know, or you design it, you create it, you live in. I like using the term you live intentionally, because a lot of times what everybody thinks is, oh, I've got to add all these things to my life. I need to do all these things. I have new doings. No, you just live life the way you live life, but you live it with intention rather than by accident. It's not about adding checklists. It's not about here's what I need to do and not to, oh, I keep doing that. I need to stop doing that. No, you do life and you just do it by intention. And when you choose by intention to do it differently, you're going to make different choices. You're going to do different things.
Well, again, I think I'm starting to like the term naive culture even more than a lousy culture.
Yeah.
Because lousy cultures start out as being naive cultures. And a naive culture is basically a culture that has a leader that is so focused, or leaders who are so focused on getting things done and getting their business accomplished and dealing with issues and challenges that every organization or every business or every team or family have, that they don't pay attention to what's really going on in their culture, and therefore they are naive about the fact that culture matters and culture makes a difference.
Right.
And our goal is to educate those who are naive along the lines of, you know, what we've learned in 36 years of serving leaders and businesses of all shapes, from startups to Fortune 500, build excellent cultures that result in win-win outcomes for the shareholders, for the leaders, for the employees, and especially for the customers and their families and their communities where they serve. So in accomplishing that, the first challenge that we face in any organization or any culture is helping people realize what's really going on below the surface of their culture so that they won't be naive.
Right. Well, that's that's a key thing, and it's why we have laws. You know, if there were no laws, if there was no speed limit, would anyone know when they were going over the speed limit? Right? And sometimes a naive culture is completely unaware of, oh, there's a way of living intentionally that's going to create a healthier culture, a more productive culture, a better workplace, a better family environment, a better all of these things. And so we got to start with the law so they can see how far under, how far over they're shooting it.
Yeah, exactly. Agree? Absolutely. And as organizations and businesses and teams and families go through.
In other words, here's how messed up you are.
Yeah. Yeah. But nobody ever.
Or we are, I
Nobody became messed up on purpose. It just happens as a result of what's taking place. So as organizations and teams and families go through seasons from one season to the next. I mean, for example, right now, we're in a season where the recent Gallup poll has told us that, again, this year, 2 years later, 70% of our employees in this country are still disengaged in their jobs. We've got 70% of our workers who go to work every day just to get a paycheck, not because they love what they do, not because they're happy, and they do just enough to get the paycheck and then go home.
You think that would transfer to family? 70% of teenagers want to leave their families.
The term for families is dysfunctional. I think every family is dysfunctional until we identify the dysfunctionality and decide, to become functional and learn how to become functional.
We're going to take a break, our first break on today's show. This is intriguing. I hope you're ready to learn some great things. We'll be right back talking about excellent cultures on Biz Culture Matters, Play 1180 AM.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
Okay, we're back from the break on Biz Culture Matters. Steve, today we're initially creating the conversation today about what we're going to call the culture war. A naive culture, which is a culture that happens by accident, that we create or live in by accident, as opposed to living with intentionality of an excellent culture. I do want to throw out, and we will get there to near the end of the day's show, though, but if you look at these as two separate distinct cultures, a naive culture or an unskilled culture or a lousy culture, whatever we want to call it, and what we're going to go ahead and label an excellent culture, the reality is we probably never, because of our humanity, we probably never reach this state of absolute excellent culture all the time because we're humans. So the key is to understand that we live within the tension of these two things between living by accident and living by intention. And that we do make mistakes sometimes, and when we do start living by accident again, we you know, whatever word you want to use, repent, change, turn around, head back towards the excellent culture, and change how we live with intent.
Well, let's just say it this way: naive cultures are basically unskilled cultures, and left alone for any length of time, a naive, unskilled culture becomes a lousy culture, and it becomes a lousy culture because stuff happens. Yeah. I mean, stuff happens. The world surrounds us.
It's a default culture.
Yeah. And right? And people are basically selfish. And if they decide, unless they decide unintentionally to be unselfish. So like our good friend, and I mean, one of the reasons that we are looking at continuously improving and updating our content and our process at Excellent Cultures, even though we've been studying organizations and leaders for 36 years, is that we're constantly learning new insights and new ideas and new approaches from, the leaders, especially the leaders that we interview, on this show. But our good friend Jack Hollis at Toyota taught us that the three danger signs of a naive culture that's on its way to becoming a lousy culture, and a lousy culture is something that, Enron, for example, exhibited that was big in the news, and, the federal government with all of these debacles that are apparent, financially on the news has done the same, begins all these cultures, all these lousy cultures begin as naive cultures. And what Jack taught us is that the three trouble signs of a lousy culture, naive culture to begin with, is, you know, trouble sign number one is if you have people that are basically thinking about talking
about or you are one
where it's all about me,
right?
Where it's all about me and it's what's in it for me and me, that's trouble sign number one.
Entitlement is the enemy of an excellent culture.
Yeah, exactly.
And as soon as we believe that we deserve something, we then become self-focused versus team-focused.
Yeah, exactly. So let's just say that it's all about me or a self-focused culture.
What are some things you've heard people say? Well, why didn't I get that?
And
what are some other ones?
And how come they got a raise and I didn't?
Right.
And they got the position that I wanted.
Well, have you not seen what I've been doing?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And I mean, and we're all that way. You know, we're all that way. We all think about ourselves first unless we intentionally train ourselves to what excellent cultures do, which is they think about the customer first. They think about each other first. They think about serving first as opposed to what's in it for me.
Would you agree that this is that alone, the what about me cancer is the most contagious in any culture?
Well, absolutely, because it's the default drive of humanity.
Right.
I mean, it's what we do naturally if we don't pay attention and if we don't buy on purpose. Change our focus.
Yeah.
And yet we see time and time and time again, excellent examples of excellent cultures are about serving the customer, serving each right. other, serving the constituents, serving the community. And what's happened, and I think, you know, some of my friends who are psychologists tell me that what happened is that, you know, in the, you know, ever since the 50s, when Dr. Benjamin Spock taught us that our children, you know, the pediatrician taught us that our children were deficient in self-esteem and that they needed to grow in self-esteem. So we had study after study and school program after school program and corporate education program after corporate education and training program after training program and leadership coach and mentor and book after another. It was all about building the self-esteem. Basically what happened was we OD'd on self-esteem.
Yeah.
And now we have a generation, if you read any of the research on our upcoming millennial generation, we have a generation full of folks who the default drive is it's all about me.
I think the
narcissistic.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not just 1950s. It started to begin in the Great Awakening, or what would you call it? The
a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, I have the words on the tip of my tongue, but you know, it essentially became when we started to think. You know, there was a time in history when, for instance, even in Greek and Roman culture, when Socrates had all of this wisdom, it was believed that what they called a daemon had come upon him and helped him speak this wisdom. And then in Rome, they turned it to calling it's a genius. You have a genius. And then when we went through this, what for whatever reason in history was called the Enlightenment period, we stopped saying he has a genius and we started saying I am a genius.
Yeah.
Or that man is a genius or that woman is a genius. And it became completely narcissistic, and you have people that do have genius ideas and are created, and then they're put under this pressure to have to recreate this because they now find their self-worth or their value in this thing they did rather than simply being a person that they are.
It just basically self-esteem, you know, went overboard. You know, we OD'd on it in our society, and now the greatest challenge with our youth is to re-implant the concept of service over self,
right,
and do it in a way that eliminates the mindset of it's all about me, you know. And it's an epidemic, according to the researchers who study the millennial generation, and it's something that businesses are facing every single day and need to face on a regular basis. So Jack Hollis said it very well. You know, if you have an all about me culture, it's the first danger sign. It's the first trouble sign. And if you're naive to the fact that you have one, then you have one.
Steve, can I share something personally on the air and with you?
Well, you're going to, whether I like it or not. So go right.
Well, I think the other day I was thinking about this as we've been putting this together, and I just happened to journal things, and I shared it on my personal blog, which is irrelevant to where it is right now. But I had the thoughts that when I was a kid, I wish no one would have told me as a kid to go and change the world. I wish they instead would have showed me how to love whatever world I was in. I wish no one, and I'm reading it right now, I wish no one would have told me that I was special as a kid. but would have showed me how I was uniquely part of a bigger plan alongside other people. I wish no one would have told me that I was handsome as a kid, but instead showed me the beauty that's in all people. I wish no one would have ever told me, you can be whatever you want as a kid, but rather showed me how to serve others with the gifts that I had been uniquely given. And that's that little switch. It's like, you are amazing. You are great. You can be whatever you want to be, rather than you are wonderful and great.
Yeah.
Within a greater plan of
a bigger picture.
Of a bigger picture.
Yeah, of community as opposed to me, I. And you becomes me, I. And when a culture is imbued with me, I, it's the antithesis of team.
Right.
It's the antithesis of customer service. It's the antithesis of community service. It's the antithesis of social consciousness, of building, green content, of preserving the planet. It's the antithesis of everything that we try to do well.
Sure.
In this more educated generation. So if you've got a culture where it's all about me, that needs to change if you want to increase the effectiveness of your performance and your bottom line.
Yeah, let's go with the second symptom of an unskilled, lousy, naive culture.
Yeah, the second symptom is foggy goals. Human beings are goal-oriented folks. We move toward whatever is uppermost in our mind. Think of the example. I remember, my mentor taught me that the greatest example is a child learning how to ride their bike. And as they learn how to ride their bike, if there's a rock in the road and they keep thinking about the rock and there's a big rock in the road, what are they going to hit? The rock?
I actually have a very personal story about that.
Did I tell you to watch out for the rock in the road?
No, but I don't know if you remember this. You might have been, as I was a younger kid, I think I must have been in fourth or fifth grade, one of our neighbors got this killer go-kart. And it was a NASCAR fiberglass embodied killer go-kart. And they were letting all the kids in the neighborhood up and down the cul-de-sac in the street drive this go-kart. And I was a little intimidated. I wasn't sure if I was ready to do it or not. But the dad of my friend who had this new go-kart was like, get in, Zach. So he strapped me in and away I go. Well, lo and behold, one of my friends is on his BMX bike right in front of me. And all I could think was, I don't want to hit him. I don't want to hit him. I don't want to hit him. But all I'm doing is staring at him.
And you hit him.
And I remember looking at his face as he turned around. He turned around and was just pedaling faster. You can just see his face turn around, pedaling faster. The scene of fear. I'm sure the same look of fear was on my own eyes because I didn't want to hit him, but I ran that kid right on over. And the dad was mad and upset and angry with me, and I was crying. And I'm pretty sure I told him I didn't want to drive it, and I didn't want to hit him. I wasn't being malicious or mean. I just, once I saw it and didn't want it, I couldn't stop focusing on it.
Yeah, and what NASCAR drivers learned very quickly in their training is when an accident occurs in front of you, don't focus on the accident.
Right.
Immediately look to the recovery point. Because the way that human beings function is we're teleological in nature, which means picture-oriented, and whatever is the dominant picture in our mind. If you're playing golf and all you can see is the water and not the green, it's going in the water. If you are talking to your children about their math grade and all you can think about is how poorly they are doing in math, then they're going to do poorly in math because, we focus on not what we want, but whatever's most dominant in our mind, and that's where we go. So if you have a culture with foggy, unclear, inspecific goals, inspecific targets, you got a bad culture about to explode in your face.
Absolutely. And it's time to start looking at what do we have to do to be clear on this so everyone's on the same page. We're going to go into a break here on Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. We're talking about the culture war and how you can overcome it. We'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
And we're back, listeners, with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. Today we are talking about the culture war, the difference between an unskilled, naive, lousy culture versus an excellent culture, the tension we live in between, and what it looks like to live with intention and to lead with intention and to move forward into what it looks like to be a part of an excellent culture. We just got done diagnosing two of the symptoms of a lousy, unskilled, naive culture. The first was it's developed with constituents or leaders that have "what about me" cancer. What about me? It's about me. The second was you have foggy vision and goals. When we don't know what we're focused on, when there hasn't been a good explanation of where we're going together, if the priorities are not defined, it's very difficult for people to stay connected and stay focused. Not knowing or not focused on the priorities scatters us all. Then we seek for our own priorities. So, Steve, what's the third
of an unskilled, naive, or soon to be lousy culture? Because they all begin, as we said earlier, unskilled or naive, and then if you don't do anything about it, it becomes a lousy culture, and then you pay the price. Is very simply a culture where people are delaying or withholding sharing their opinion. If people are not sharing their opinion upfront, forthright, immediately whenever they think it, then you essentially have a culture of fear, because the main reason that people delay sharing or they withhold sharing their opinion is because they're either afraid of some adverse situation that's going to come their way if they tell their opinion or their point of view, or they do it because they feel that it's not important and they're afraid of being looked at as ineffective or unproductive or less than stellar or any number of other reasons that are all based in fear. So if your people are not totally forthright and upfront about sharing their opinion straight out, good, bad, or wrong, ugly, then you got a trouble sign. Because in high-performance cultures, everybody's about sharing their opinion, and they have robust dialogue, and they converse and debate and come to consensus. And then once they come to consensus, it's a real consensus, then they implement, not a fake, phony consensus where we think as leaders we have a consensus, but then there's 15 meetings after the meeting that take place around a cup of coffee or at the bar or, over a beer or at the water cooler after consensus is reached.
We had a great show with Sarah Bird from Moz.com, their COO over there at Moz.com, about this very issue. And she really shared some great insights. You can go back and stream the show from Sarah about living out tag fee values and stuff like that. But anyways, I digress. Her sharing how much time that they'll spend extra time in meetings to make sure that they're on the same page, that everybody does get the opportunity in their meetings to share, to transparently share. And she knows it's going to create conflict, and they know that it's going to have conflict, but they work hard and takes the extra time to do that because they know how valuable it is.
Yeah, and so many of us, again, none of this stuff happens intentionally. It just happens if we don't pay attention to it. So if you're a results-oriented personality, as most leaders are, even at home, if another family member wants to share their point of view, but they never get to share it because they feel like they're not heard, or they feel like they would be looked down on, or whoever the results-oriented power figure is just is too impatient to allow it to come forth, then you've got a sign of a bad culture. It needs to get addressed, and you know that's all the time we're going to spend talking about bad cultures, because we want to spend more time in this show talking about good cultures and how to change what you can change. The first step, as you know, is to identify, you know, where you need to change. You know, get a good solid diagnosis at Excellent Cultures. We do that with our business DNA diagnostic. That's a science-based instrument that measures what's going on in the culture, and tells people, you know, tells people, tells leaders, tells an organization, you know, where do they need to change between based upon the gap analysis that takes place between where they are in their current culture and compared to the ideal culture, the vision culture that they want to create.
Well, I mean, let's very quickly, to make it a little easier so we're not just babbling on and on, although it's great information, we want to make sure people that we're listeners were knowing what an excellent culture is. The difference, the main difference is now the excellent culture is the desired culture of not only the leadership, but each and every constituent within the community, family, or corporation. The culture is defined by the relationships. It's defined by their creating together, working together, and moving forward together. Steve, I mean, in your 35 years of experience, can culture be dictated?
It can certainly be dictated, but that's no reason to believe that what's dictated is going to get carried out.
Right, exactly. That's the point. That's what I wanted to hear from you.
It doesn't mean it's going to get carried out. You know, human beings have free wills, and especially in this generation, full of young people growing up with their own handheld, you know, smartphone instrument that has now become an appendage to their body. People don't like to be told what to do.
Right.
They like to be involved in making wise decisions where they self-discover what's the best path to take.
And the beautiful idea of genius happens outside of ourselves just as much as it can within.
Of course it does.
I think not just to look at it as, well, people want to be involved, so I'm going to be a good leader and involve people because that's what they want.
Yeah.
Like that just comes from a very, at least from where I'm sitting, can sound very manipulative, can sound very, well, I'm going to do the right thing because they want to be a part and they want to have input, but really I'm going to do whatever the hell I want because I'm the leader.
Yeah.
But to realize that, and that's the first step. I mean, we have that, is realizing that no one person can make the end all happen. Excellent culture, that's the first step. You realize that no one person can make the end
all
happen.
No one person can make it happen. None of us are perfect, and none of us see the whole truth. That's why teams are valuable and important.
Right.
So first and foremost, an excellent culture is the opposite of what about me. It's a culture that's about serving the customer. It's about what about we? What about the customer? What about each other? What about our family? What about our community? What about all the constituents that are involved? It's a how can we serve culture instead of a what about me culture.
I love how we word it in particular. It's a culture that has a high sensitivity towards meeting the needs of others.
Absolutely.
And that is something.
Well, and that's what businesses do. That's what organizations, that's what government is supposed to do.
Why am I laughing?
No comment.
Maybe
this is
I'm
not
bitter.
A political show. This is not a political show.
But anyways, I think when you're moving towards an excellent culture, having that high sensitivity towards meeting the need of others means that I as a person am constantly asking myself within my own self the question, why am I doing what I'm doing? I now have to ask myself, I can't just say I'm going to do this. I have to go, why am I doing it, and getting the proper motivation of why I'm doing it.
Because the question is why.
Right.
Why? Question mark.
Why?
So, secondly, an excellent culture is a culture with crystal clear, precise vision and goals. You know, and there's the why question. Why are we doing this? What is the outcome we're looking for? What's the expectation? Not foggy, crystal clear, concise goals, visions, expectations. Whether they are designed by leaders and passed out or designed collaboratively seems to work so much better because you take advantage of everybody's point of view rather than just one person's point of view. But in some cases, if you're in a crisis, you don't have time for a consensus. But
well, and let's throw out, too, what Sarah Bird mentioned, too. She goes, when Moz first started, they were small enough to do consensus.
Yeah, exactly.
And now they're, you know, over 150 or so employees. Now it's not necessarily about gaining consensus. It is about hiring the people that already believe that culture.
Yeah, they're well, 150 employees and hundreds of thousands of customer partners.
Right.
You know, it's huge. So clear, concise vision and goals. And then finally, an excellent culture is a culture where people are all about running full out, sharing their opinions, sharing their points of view, willing to take risks, willing to step out there and put their point of view on the table, discuss it, talk about it, come to consensus, and then execute and implement.
Openly, candidly, honestly, transparently.
Yeah, real simple, three things. So now we know. I mean, how do we go about getting there? First step is we need to identify what needs to change in order to get us to that model of those three things. And then the second piece of the puzzle is changing from where we are to those dominant beliefs, those dominant behaviors. And as you get into changing, the biggest obstacle you're going to confront is, number one, human beings resist change.
Right.
I mean,
this plan would work great if it wasn't for all these people.
Yeah. Yeah. The human beings resist change. I mean, the greatest fear of an organ transplant is rejection.
Right.
You know, the human body, the human mind, the human spirit is made to resist change. Human beings resist change. The research identified that 70% of all organizational change initiatives fail to deliver the desired results. That's at the Harvard Business School and the London Business School, both sides of the Atlantic, both continents. Major reason, major cause, insufficient focus on people, and human beings resist change. So if people don't want to change, and transforming from a naive or a lousy culture to an excellent culture requires change, you better be addressing that obstacle right up straight away. And then secondly, is people don't know what they can change and what they can't change or how to change. So how to change what you can change starts with knowing what you can change and what you can't change. And then it's about identifying what you can change and going to work on changing it.
Yeah. Let's throw in this one thing too. We live between the tension of the two cultures. Each of us faces the reality of having a default culture that is self-centered, narrow-minded, short-sighted, counterproductive in regards to personal relationships and meditation and all that stuff. And when we understand that we naturally live in between the two cultures, it causes us to view our place through the lenses of personal reality rather than right and wrong. Now, I have a reason to live within community of my corporation, my family, because we need each other to point each other back to the excellent culture. We need the help of one another to not judge us, but to help us see when we're off, to get us back moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. Nobody sees the trees in their own forest.
Exactly. So we're going into our last segment, guys. We're going to end this show with what's your part? What is within your control and how do you get going in building an excellent culture? We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we're back. with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. Steve, we are wrapping up this segment. Now we get into the nitty-gritty of what's our part. We have been talking about culture. We've been talking about what the difference between a lousy, we're going to call naive, unskilled culture, which is the default culture of all humanity.
And not all naive, unskilled cultures are lousy. I mean, they just become that way over time when we don't recognize that we're naive or that the culture... I mean, the Titanic, we said earlier, sank because of the belief system of the captain and the crew that we're, you know, it was an arrogant culture. You know, we're bulletproof. Nobody can touch us. And that caused them to not recognize the threat of the iceberg until it was too late. So, you know, not every culture that's naive is a lousy culture, but naive cultures and unskilled cultures left alone become lousy cultures because that's just the human condition. I mean, none of us are perfect. We make mistakes, and we've talked about that. So the key thing, though, is, okay, so let's say we do a self-assessment, and we get around the table, and we talk, or we do 360 reviews, or we bring in excellent cultures and do a biz culture MRI on our culture, and we identify that, okay, we've got these things going on in our culture that are not what we want. They're trouble signs. We want to narrow the gap. We want to close them, or we have a good culture. But as Stephen Collins taught us, good is the enemy of great. We want a great culture. You know, how do we change this stuff? How do we change what we need to change? Well, step one is identifying what we can change and what we can't.
Yeah.
And we're going to focus on the cans because cans always overcome can'ts.
Right.
And the two big cans, what can you change, are real simple. You can change your attitude and you can change your effort. Any human being can change their attitude. They can change their effort if they want to.
What if we just said, because I think when we throw out this word change, people assume that that means, oh, I'm going to change it, which means it's changed forever, which we all know that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, change is a process.
Change is a process. But even then, I'm going to die still battling bad attitudes from time to time. I'm never going to reach a point on this earth where I'm going to have the greatest attitude and beliefs and expectations. Like I'm going to be on the planet a human, and I'm going to wrestle between the tension of every day of understanding that I do have control over my attitude. So what if we called that, here's what I have control of, or I have stewardship of, rather than change? I don't know. When I hear change, that means, well, I change it and it's done. And then I have this attitude of, look at me.
Okay.
And I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Okay. Well, you know, let's just say that the things we have control of are our attitudes and our efforts.
Right.
And that's something that every human being has control of.
Right.
Is their attitude and their effort. Nobody can say we don't have control over our attitude and our effort.
Right.
And once we've identified that, and then it's all about, okay, what are the attitudes we have that need to change or that we want to change to something that is much more consistent with an out that's going to get us the outcome that we want.
Right.
And I mean, oftentimes in every organization, every business, every person's life, attitudes that were once good become bad over time. You know, I remember years ago, your mom had an attitude, my wife, an attitude that she learned as a young girl growing up in the 50s. And it was, water is dangerous and it can kill you. And she learned it very experientially from her mom, who had the same attitude, was afraid of water till the day she died. Not water you drink, but the kind you swim in. And she almost drowned, I think, as a 3-year-old. And so now you've got this attitude, water is dangerous and can kill you. Now, if you're growing up in the 50s, where the culture is nobody's learning how to swim until they're in their teens, or at least in elementary school, water is dangerous and can kill you is a very good attitude. It's a positive attitude because it causes you to stay away from the threat. You know, it'd be like jumping off a building can kill you. That's a positive attitude because it can. But the Wright brothers didn't believe that jumping off a building could kill you. They changed the attitude. And of course, you know, the aerospace industry was birthed as a result of it. So that was a positive attitude way back when the goal was to stay alive. When she grew up and became a mom and moved into this new home with a swimming pool in the backyard because her husband was egotistical and insensitive, and that's a direct quote, by the way. And both children were grasping onto her legs, quivering at the side of their backyard pool along with their mom, while the other kids in the neighborhood were having a wonderful time in their backyard pool. water is dangerous and kill you became a bad attitude, a negative attitude that was holding, you know, her back from being a positive influence on her kids. So thank God she knew how to change attitudes. And when we recognize that and change those attitudes, recognizing the attitudes that once were good that then become bad, and good and bad are just positive and negative, depends upon where we're going and where we're leaning. Best definition of an attitude I ever heard was aeronautical terminology, where if you get in an aircraft, on the dash of an aircraft, the pilot sees an attitude gauge. And it's the direction in which the plane is leaning in relationship to the horizon. So a positive attitude is one that causes us to lean toward the outcome that we want. A negative attitude is one that causes us to lean away. So we need to identify in our organizations, in our teams, in ourselves, what are the attitudes that we have that are causing us to lean in a direction of the outcome that we want, compared to what are the attitudes we have that are causing us to lean in a direction that we don't want? And those are the things we go about changing. And every business has systems and processes. And yet, rarely do we find a business that ever asks the question, is how these systems and processes that we've invented to serve a customer, to solve a problem, get the product to the customer faster, are these systems and processes causing bad culture or good culture? How we implement them, we might be getting the product to the customer faster, but if we're offending all of our employees or causing damage to their families, the price is going to be paid later. So it's a matter of what are the attitudes that are consistent with the outcome that we want, the culture that we want, the business results that we want, the success that we want, and then addressing those that need to be changed and going about changing them. But if you believe that nothing can change and it's not up to you, it's always up to something outside of you, and your attitude is not in your control, or your effort is not in your control, you're stuck. And it's big trouble. And if you've got a whole culture, an organization full of people who believe that we can't change, we hate change, nobody can change, our effort is never going to make a difference. And in many cases, you'll have people who know very much that their effort can make a difference, but they've been in a culture where it hasn't made a difference for so long that they just give up. And so they stop putting forth effort. You know, Gallup calls it discretionary effort. They stop, you know, contributing their discretionary free will effort because they don't believe it's going to make a difference. Or they stop paying attention to it, and they just accept the status quo of, you know, we're never going to get any better. It's never going to improve.
That's when you see the employees constantly calling in sick, making excuses.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. And I mean, and I was visiting, having coffee with a senior VP of a very successful firm, one of our clients, not too long ago, you know, who was sharing, you know, with me some brilliant ideas on how to reshape the organizational fiber, how to cut costs, how to increase revenues. And my question was, well, why didn't you make those recommendations, you know, long ago, because you've been with the company for a while? And her comment was, I did, but they were never listened to.
Right.
So if people develop the mindset that, you know, I can make these recommendations, but it's never going to make a difference, why waste the time? I know another senior VP of a billion-dollar privately held company, another client, you know, who has been about, you know, serving that company for most of their career, and they've gotten to the stage where it's just not worth the effort or the energy or the pain to, you know, get the boss to change how they think, how they act, how they believe, how they micromanage versus empowerment manage. And so they've just given up. You know, it's not worth the time to try anymore, so I might as well focus on something else. And I mean, and those kinds of attitudes and mindsets get developed in any organization, any team, any group, any family, just by time and growth and experience. And the more people you have, the more significant they become. So if you don't know what you can change, and if you don't believe you can change your attitude or you can change your effort, you are stuck and you're going to stay stuck.
I have a really good, transparent, personal example of a great, great friend and who's part of a nonprofit organization that I founded a few years ago, where I think it showed up a lot because I was going through classes for my master's degree. And so when you go through classes, you instantly feel smarter than everybody else. And you start learning and growing and doing good things.
And if you're not careful, you start thinking about, it's all about me. It's all about me and how smart I am.
Well, and I wanted to engage others in this process that I was going through. However, as they engaged and as they gave input, I would stop and correct them on how they were saying something to give them a better view. What I thought was, I'm going to help them have a better view and a better way to communicate this so they can teach it to others. So I'm going to constantly be correcting how they're going to say it. Well, sooner or later, they just stopped saying anything because I noticed I wasn't equipping, empowering, and sending and releasing. I was more concerned on being the guru and less concerned on hearing what they had to say.
And so you develop the third symptom of a bad culture.
There you go.
People delaying or withholding sharing their opinions.
Right. Well, it's interesting because my heart was, I want you to be involved. I want you to do this. But the way in which I was communicating did not lend itself to that. And what I had to learn, what I learned roughly the hard way through that process, was people may use different words to say the same thing. And I have to have better ears to listen to the heart of what they're saying, not just whether they're saying the words in a way that I would say.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I remember one story of a CEO when asked the kind of culture that you want to create. You know, he said, I want a culture of robust dialogue. That's what we talk about every day. We want people who share their opinions and who work together and build a team and execute and implement.
Right.
And then when we looked at the data, it showed that the culture was anything less than robust dialogue. And when
interviewing, it was robust monologue.
Yeah. When interviewing the executives, the vice presidents under the bridge of anonymity and confidentiality, they told us whenever this executive talks, it's not robust dialogue; it's robust monologue. And he was not aware.
He wasn't aware. He just wasn't aware. We have to end the show. I love this conversation. If you're listening, you know you want to tune in again. We'll be back next week. Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. See you later.